This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent 6 of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin, Rumble, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing and continued support. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the best place to do that. We do have our YouTube channel back. I make no representations about how long that will last. We are slowly repopulating it. So if you catch a Macroaggressions a channel out there on YouTube with about just a little under 7,000 people, that's us. You can go find us over there. We appreciate our sponsors. My God, if it wasn't for them, we really couldn't do what we're doing. So thank you to the folks over at Van Man. You can go to vanman.shop. Are you familiar with Van Man? They have fantastic toiletries. Let's just call it that. Tooth powder. You get tooth powder, you'll never get toothpaste again. They have something called tallow and honey balm. They have the tallow and coconut soap. They have peppermint aloe mouth rinse. They have a new deodorant, no aluminum, any of that stuff. And they also have vanilla body butter. They sent me a container of that. And I was impressed. Well, first of all, I was impressed with the packaging because it's awesome and that matters. But also the ingredients, most importantly, let's not get too superficial here. The ingredients, grass-fed beef tallow, shea butter, olive oil, honey, vanilla oil, that's it. So it's worth taking a look. Go to vanman.shop. If you find something you like, the discount code on your way out the door is macro. Go ahead and use that. And make sure to follow them over on X. They're fantastic. I think you'll like their sense of humor on things. And also, look, if you need storable food, I've got the hookup for you. You'll get 10% off on your first order if you use the discount code macro, but go over to Augustin Farms and take a look at what they've got. They've got the ultimate supply of storable food. It's not just the emergency kits, which they have, and you can buy those and be done with it. But if you're somebody who actually plans on eating this food during the apocalypse, you're going to have to make sure that you've got some good stuff to work with. They have butter powder, they have dehydrated eggs and dairy, fruits and vegetables, meats and proteins. There's all kinds of stuff going on over there. They have a warehouse sale item section too. Go dig around through there. If you find something you like, the discount code is MACRO on your way out the door. So they have everything you could possibly need. Just go over there, AugustinFarms.com. Discount code MACRO. Links are down in the show notes. Hopefully you don't need storable food for the apocalypse, but my God, you might. And since we're talking about the apocalypse, we just went through the COVID apocalypse, and we were it was great to have Zoe Smith on to talk about that. But we're going to go a little bit deeper this time. Welcome back to the show, Zoe Smith. Hi, Zoe. Good to see you again. What's cooking?
Hi, Charlie. Thanks for having me back. I'm glad to be able to get back and get into the meaty part of the book, which is the part that I got censored for more than anything else, honestly. When I handed the book to editors and I said, hey, could you go over this chapter 6 where I talk about the connection to healthcare and eugenics? That's when they all put it down and walked away and went, okay, this is conspiracy theory stuff. Can't deal with it. Not going to publish that.
Yeah, that's where they get a little weak in the knees when you bring up the eugenics thread that runs through all of this. And it's not... The general public has no knowledge of this, right? And I suppose they would love to keep it that way. I think that ship is sailing, though, a little bit with COVID in the aftermath of that. I think people are starting to recognize that these shots could equal death. You know, not on every person every time, of course, but they've now made this connection in a way that maybe in 2019 they were unwilling or unable to do that. When you see people, newscasters all collapsing, and they make a compilation video of that, or you're waiting in some, I don't know, you're waiting in some parking lot for some dude to walk up to your car and give you an injection in your shoulder. I mean, and then people falling over and dropping dead in their cars or getting dragged out of big vaccination halls and having this all on camera. Like, this is a catastrophe from public relations with regard to vaccines.
Honestly, absolutely it is. And you're totally right. The general public does not know about this, myself included. I was in healthcare and I didn't see that it's based in eugenics. And until I lived through it, because for people who don't know, I'm a whistleblower. I was a medical coder. So I was actually just reviewing medical records. I wasn't actually even face to face with patients in the hospital, but I was reviewing all the medical evidence of what was going on. And it was my job to basically assign the diagnosis and procedure codes and send that to insurance. So I was really aware of the fact that during the year 2020, before the vaccines came out, the hospital protocols were killing people, but they were labeling it as COVID. It was my job to label it as COVID and get them a bonus. And that is when I started waking up. And I started looking at all of the vaccines, because when they started saying, oh, you can get free Krispy Kreme for life if you get a vaccine, I was like, okay, this kind of pressure is not normal. And I went down the rabbit hole at that point. And the effects of the vaccines were just as you described, only like within about 4 months of the rollout of the vaccines. By April is when I had to walk away, because I probably had only seen about 2 or 3 months worth of vaccine injuries from the COVID shots at that point. But I knew at that point, and I was even on a podcast called Deborah Gets Red Pill way back then. I don't think he's even doing that podcast anymore.
I love Deborah. I would brace her for impact before I was. I'd say, now I'm going to say something. You're not going to like it.
She's so sweet. I know it was a delicate interview, but actually she was. I think I was able to open her eyes to some of it, because she was one of the ones with the free lifetime supply of Krispy Kreme for getting the vaccine. And here I am telling her to her face that the COVID-19 vaccine is more dangerous than all of the other vaccines combined. And that was before we had the science that came out and shows that that's absolutely true. And so because of the devastation of that, I was like, okay, basically healing centers got turned into killing centers. And that was incentivized. That was intentional. And then throughout the entire year of 2021, when the vaccines came out, my job should have been to report the vaccine injuries. There should have been a code for that. And they had a whole year to create it, and they never did. I finally found out a few years later, after continuing that search, that the code that should have been assigned to all of those victims with the seizures and the strokes and the blood clots and blood disorders and just every other thing you could think of, cancer, that code didn't exist. And so I went, okay, this is intentional. They are absolutely trying to bury the genocide that just happened. And that's when I decided, okay, the healthcare system has gone entirely wrong. When did this happen? And who is pulling the strings? And it's kind of ironic that I just said who right there, because that's who I found out is at the top, is the WHO.
We turn into a who's on first? You know, I don't know who's on second. You know, who created the pandemic? That's right. No, I'm asking you who. It's frustrating to go through. The COVID era was frustrating for me for a variety of reasons, but one of them was because I came into it with a pretty good understanding of what the pharmaceutical industry was and what it wasn't, because I had written a book about it in 2017, not just about that, but it covered it. And so you kind of need to know what they are and who they're financed by and where their origins are. And so I knew going in that this is a criminal cartel that operates, you know, under the cover of white lab coats and things like that. And the media runs cover for them. But I knew that the general public didn't know that. And my fear was that it was going to just be too late to get them up to speed on everything. What was your experience like? Because you're in, like you said, you didn't really know the details of what had gone on in the past in terms of the vaccines. Maybe in retrospect now you can look and obviously connect those dots. But where you were during COVID, it wasn't really in your orbit to be worried about that. You were focusing on other things. Was that the general feeling inside where you worked, that nobody had any idea about what the pharmaceutical industry was or what the vaccines actually did or what the underlying agenda was? Was this catching everybody off guard?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, oh, everybody. God. And to this day, it still blindsides a whole bunch of people that are still in it, that already lived through it. And they're still just, this is why I call it a cult. I don't actually refer to it as like a cult like the Illuminati, right, or anything like that. Even though a lot of the people at the top are involved in those kinds of cults, I decided to try and keep it as like black and white scientific, yeah, because there's so much of the content that I have that's already so controversial. Why add a whole nother flavor? And I could do a whole nother book on just the connections between cults and the medical system. But I really refer to the indoctrination process, because it's a very systematic system of how they keep you siloed and from the truth. Everybody in the medical system, medical cult, you have to have a license. You have to go through education, and the education is controlled. And it's a very, culture. The word culture is based in the word cult. It's not logical in that when you are going through the education, if you start to question germ theory, if you start to question pharma drugs not being effective, if you start to question vaccines in particular, being a subset of pharma drugs, you will be socially shunned to the point of possibly losing your job and not being able to work in healthcare ever, ever again. In fact, I think I've been blacklisted on some. I haven't actually tried to go back in, but I'm pretty sure I've been blacklisted, just like most of them. And that's really where it comes from. But then once you get into it, so like you basically have to drink the Kool-Aid in order to be in it. So at least not verbally questioning certain parts of the ideology, right? But then they have this, especially the HIPAA law, which interestingly was drafted by Hillary Clinton and signed in by Bill Clinton. I don't think that's
sure
a coincidence. But that's the law that makes it so you are only allowed to see the medical record information or talk about any medical information about that is the minimum necessary amount to do your job. So they get you all siloed into basically it's a production line where you're only doing this one little part where you assign this one little thing to your widget and then you send it on to the next person and they know nothing about what you did and you know nothing about what they did. And between all of these layers, you would literally have to get through all of those layers in order to even start to educate yourself on what pharma drugs actually do, or germ theory, or vaccines, like any of the really what I think are the most important parts of information that were weaponized during the whole COVID scandemic.
Yeah. But I mean, it really was like we were getting it on every angle, but the information side of things, that what they were telling us was true, what they were telling us, you know, was so disjointed and nonsensical. It felt cult-like is the best way to describe it. It absolutely is. There's, you know, when you see the dancing nurses and in these videos, and I always try to ask myself, like, what are they trying to get me to feel? You know, I know I'm being manipulated. Mm-hmm. I'm being manipulated by advertising. I'm being manipulated by my TV, my radio, my computer, everything. But so I'm not offended that I'm being manipulated. I'm just trying to figure out what it is they want me to feel with the dancing nurses. Because what I felt was a disgust that was hard to quantify. I wanted to wring all of their necks because I knew there wasn't an actual pandemic going on, because I'm getting reports from people who I know on the ground saying, we just went through all the hospitals and they're empty. There's nobody there. So I get that information. I watch the TikTok videos where they clearly have enough time to be doing all this. And I was filled with rage. And I don't know if that was the desired effect that they wanted everybody to feel. I don't know if they thought, I don't know if half the nation got up and started dancing along with the videos, for all I know. I mean, I really don't know what was going on. I just know that I was filled with so much rage that because I wanted to just shake the shit out of everybody and go, can't you see this? They're incentivizing you with donuts, for God's sake.
I still do. And I call that dancing on people's graves. When you see those nurses dancing, even one of the clips, they're like laughing as they've got this fake dead body on their shoulders that they're carrying through a hallway. And that's literally what they were doing. As these same dancing nurses were murdering our family and friends behind closed doors, they're dancing and laughing about it. So I was equally infuriated as you. And that was the point where I was waking up and realizing hospitals have been turned into killing centers, because my job was about on the chopping block at that point. Everyone was getting furloughed and told, like, forced vacation time, use all your PTO, while the dancing nurses thing was going on. So I asked myself the same question, what were other people supposed to feel? Because I was completely infuriated, because I knew there's no pandemic. And I knew what those same dancing nurses were doing from the outset. But yeah, I do think that a lot of people were dancing along at home and I think they were trying to take away the scary factor of COVID-19 and maybe like be the comic relief. You know how like in every sitcom there has to be like some doof that just likes, you know, like Towley or Kenny in South Park, you know, just has to release the tension of the situation. So I from like a diabolical, you know, cult leader mentality, I suspect that might have been what they wanted us to feel.
I'm assuming there was tons of dancing going on in Jonestown as well, you know, until the very end, you know, until there wasn't.
Oh yeah.
And the incentivization structure of these vaccines that you, when we talked the first time, and you and I've talked in multiple interviews since then about this, I, you know, that was one of these components that people were saying, oh, that's conspiracy theory, you know, and you're just like, well, it certainly does sound crazy. I'll give you that they're incentivizing people to put people on ventilators and give them remdesivir or any of the sort of countless items on that a la carte menu of terror that you could tick off and get paid for. But you laid it out and, of course, wrote a book about it as well, saying, no, this isn't conspiracy theory. This is now moved into conspiracy analysis. We're looking at what happened when they put a price on your grandmother. They put a price on your friend. I lost my friend Kev Baker. They put him on a ventilator and murdered him in Glasgow. And I'll never forgive those bastards for that, you know? And everybody's got a story like that. So, I mean, yeah.
Speaking of, on Valentine's Day in 2026, so coming up in a few months, I have on my website a page for a vigil. There's a video, and then there's a sign-up form, and you can submit a name. And what I will do with my friends is we're going to the Gates Foundation, and we're going to set up a bunch of luminarias. So we're basically going to light a candle. It's going to be in a paper bag. It's called a luminaria. They do it in the Southwest. I think they do it for the Day of the Dead, like kind of to light the pathway to their little, like, I don't know, like tribute to their lost family member. And it's the day that their lost family member can come back and visit with them. So that's where I got the idea of doing a luminaria thing. And we're taking names of the people that we've lost. So I'm going to write my cousin's name, who died suddenly after, I'm pretty sure she got the vaccine and then drove into a tree, died instantly. No one investigated it. They just said, oh, she lost control, but there were no brakes at all. She didn't even try and stop. Any other adult that had happened to, from a medical perspective, the coroner who was there would have done a full autopsy. They would have tried to look for a heart attack or signs of seizure or signs of a stroke or something that might have impaired the driver before the impact. And then they would call that the cause of death. But after COVID, oh no, it's just a car wreck. It's just a car wreck. No one's going to look any further into it than that. And so many other people have stories like that. I know there's hundreds of thousands of people that we've lost, and it's been invisible. No one has been able to see this because it all happened behind closed doors. Yeah. And so I'm trying to create a visual representation and hopefully a way to unite us all, because we're kind of all in our own little echo chambers and fighting over, well, what was the pandemic? And, oh, was it this? Was it that? And, you know, there's different narratives in depending on which echo chamber you happen to be in. And people will all, there's so much infighting between the two. I'm trying to find, well, what are the basic immutable things that we can't really argue about, that we can actually like come together and agree, okay, well, these things happened, we didn't like them, and we have to make it so it can't happen again.
Yeah. Boy, I think that'd be a nice visual representation for the Gates Foundation. It wouldn't be the first time they've murdered tons of people with their vaccines. Of course, they're on the record back in Africa, you know, for decades. They've been, there's a long list of long trail of dead bodies in the wake of the Gates Foundation. And then of course you see him talking on interviews about how he thinks vaccines are a great investment, 20x opportunity for him. So why not make money while you're also depopulating? When you started to get into this topic of eugenics, were you surprised how many people with recognizable faces were deeply involved in it? And since we're talking about Bill Gates and understanding his dad's relationship to Planned Parenthood and all of this, boy, I used to think that if you were a bloodthirsty mass murdering lunatic, they would hide you in the shadows and never put the camera on you. But apparently you get to give a TED talk in Long Beach in 2010 and talk about how if our vaccines do a great job, we can lower the world's population by 10 or 15%. He should have been led away in handcuffs. Instead, they probably gave him an award at the end of that. And I just think, what are people looking at? I mean, in your world, you know, you sort of bridged the gap between all of this. You had one foot in the normie medical world and one foot out of this. Do people even know what eugenics is as a concept inside the healthcare industry? Is it talked about? Is it something that people know about?
It's absolutely not talked about. The link between eugenics and how our own, the founder of the CDC was actually, I've done some research and looked into him. I think his name was Joseph Mountain, and they've equated him as being the Fauci of his time.
Great.
And I mean, for a full century, when you go back and you look at the people who created the AMA, who created the CDC, the Eugenics Records Office, which is the first place that the Cancer Society had a registry, and they were taking cards on people just like in the camps that, you know, Gates' connection to IBM And they had, you know, the Hollerith carts in the camps in Germany. We had that in America, basically. If they call it a Hollerith machine, it wasn't IBM necessarily, but they were keeping cards on people for genetic purposes. Nobody knows this. I mean, it's written, it's in history. If people care to look at it, it's there. But they don't teach this to you in medical school when they start talking about the history of everything. And they talk about, like the hospital that I worked for in Phoenix, they were started, they bring you in and they do this orientation and they tell you this is where our hospital came from. And it was all about TB at the time, because that's when the hospital, the family that like first found in the clinic that became a hospital, it was all about treating TB. And when you start even looking at how those diseases came about and who came up with the vaccine or the program to cure whatever disease, even those people are tied to eugenics, but they never tell you any of that. They only, I mean, it's like sugarcoating everything. And you're just like how our history books don't tell us the full story. They just tell us what they want us to know. Same thing about medical education. So nobody knows that there's a link there, even though it's staring you right in your face. I even looked at, so the organization that licenses medical coders is AHIMA, American Health Information Management Association. And I looked at the woman who was heading that up during 2020 when I, or 2022 when I started reading the book and or writing the book. And she is connected, and all the other people that head up AHIMA are connected to Lockheed Martin, to the Rockefellers, to a bunch of politicians. I mean, they're from this current day all the way back, you can see the revolving door between people who are in the Eugenics Society and the closely related Statistical Society to now. And the only thing that they've really done is rebranded and changed the name so it doesn't sound so bad. So yeah, nobody has really been taught in healthcare that really what you're practicing is eugenics. Yeah. And they've all been brainwashed to think that how we're practicing healthcare to try and be equitable and fair, that's based in eugenics. So it continues to this very day. And it's incentivized by the banks. And, you know, media runs a cover and government helps them profit from it.
Let's get weird for just a second here, because when I saw them swabbing everybody's noses during COVID and sending that back, I immediately went to 23andMe, you know, genealogy swabs.
Yeah.
And I started thinking, they're looking for something. I wonder if they're looking for something.
That was really smart, because that's what I was thinking exactly the same. But I had background knowledge to know that the PCR test that, because I used to work at Oregon Health and Science University way back in the day, and I was a lab assistant while I was going to college. That's how I earned money to go to college. And we did PCR tests back then. That was like early 2000s. And it was all on genetic stuff. So it was like, if someone in your family's had cancer, then you can come in and you can have a genetic screen done. And if you have that same gene for that cancer, then we'll remove that organ prophylactically. So like Angelina Jolie had the BCRA gene or whatever for breast cancer. So she went and had it done before she got cancer. PCR was used for that. Same thing for new parents. So like if you have like a Huntington's disease gene in your family, or, you know, some other thing like that, you can do a genetic screen, and then, and they call it like, I don't know, family planning or something like that, which sounds very Planned Parenthood, and it is. But they don't teach you that. They don't teach you that genetics is, you know, all basically eugenics. Yeah. And so fast forward to 2020, when I started realizing, oh, there's these false positives with the test. And I knew that you didn't even need to have a test to be diagnosed with it. The doctor just had to look at you and say, oh, I think you have COVID. So that's so smart that you were thinking, oh, it's got to be a genetic screen. Because at some point down the line, I've actually found documentation from the CDC that ordered every CLIA certified lab to send genetic sequences to one of two different gene banks, GISAID, so GISAID, or NCBI, one of those two gene banks. And it did say in the fine print, like, oh, these sequences for COVID. But I asked David Rasnick, who I did an interview with, and he actually knew Carrie Mullis and worked with Carrie Mullis at one point, who invented PCR. And I asked him this specifically. I said, so obviously the PCR can run an entire DNA sequence. And here's this instruction I showed in the document. I said, okay, they're sending these sequences and people are trolling me. And, you know, the internet masses are commenting back saying, oh no, that was just the sequence for COVID, for the variant of COVID, because they had like six of them listed out. And I asked him, do you think they're actually like, after they run the PCR test and they get this sequence and then they have to send it to the gene bank, do you think they're actually spending the time to edit it and cut out just that section? Or do you think they're just sending the whole thing and then the gene bank can decide which section they want to take as their sequence? And he goes, they don't have the time to go in and edit all of that. I mean, they could, but most likely, no. Most likely, they're just sending the whole thing and then the gene bank that they send it to. And he's shown evidence of how much DNA has been sent to these gene banks. They're tracking all of it carefully. So, yeah, that's absolutely what they're doing.
Who owns the gene banks?
Well, NCBI and GISAID, I haven't looked into who owns them, but there's another one that was creating PCR tests. And I believe that all of the PCR tests were doing the same thing, sending genetic information back to some hive mind, whether that's NCBI or, you know, some other gene bank. And so it's generally the testing places that are, you know, having it send back. So there is the Human Genome Project in China, which is now, I forget the name. It changed its name, but it's the biggest biotech company in China now. And they made PCR test kits, PCR and the IgG, which is the antibody test. And they sent it to America. And who do you think is getting those results back? So our DNA is going to some Chinese database, and even our own American military has flagged that gene bank as being a problem because they have all our individual information. And when you go to that gene bank, and the other ones are really similar when you look at like why they exist and what they think they're doing with our DNA, because I was really interested in why are they collecting all of this? They're obviously going to use it against us in some way. So what is that? How do we get in ahead of that, or how do we stop it? And it says on the one in China anyway, and the other ones basically say it in not in so clear terms, that they are collecting our DNA because they need this massive amount population genomics so they can create vaccines and therapeutics or drugs, biologics tailored to our individual genome. And then we have Larry Ellison come out with Donald Trump on day two of the administration saying exactly that. We're going to use AI to analyze your blood, which is how they get the DNA gene sequences. It's AI that creates the DNA gene sequences that sends it to the gene banks. That's why it's electronic and they can send it because it's using AI. It's not like, you know, a sample that they're sending physically. It's a digital code. And yeah, so it all comes together.
The genetic,
and that's absolutely
the genetic
what
side of it is really scary, because this is these lunatics had talked about wanting to do this, of course, years ago, and you know they would have, if it had been up to them, they would have done this with Cecil Rhodes and the Round Table in like the late 1800s. They could have figured out a way to get rid of all the brown people. They would have done it, you know, like that. But now they have the technology to do that. And whenever all these tests were coming back, you know, people are like, am I testing positive or negative with this PCR test? I was like, it doesn't matter. You're testing positive for giving your information to some unknown entity who is most definitely collecting it and doing God knows what, you know, I don't know, linking you to some obscure nonsense fake crime from 20 years, some rape from 30 years ago that they just made up and pinned on you with genetic information. You left your genetic sequence at the scene of the crime. How can you explain that? Like, I have no idea. How'd your genetic sequence get there? I have no idea. You took a PCR test in 2020 to see if you had the flu, and now the Chinese have your genetic sequence and can do it and can build actual replicas of you in some underground lab somewhere. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know why they'd want more of us.
So
they're trying to depopulate us.
I mean, absolutely. In every way they can. So they're creating, like, and it is all about the tools that they have now and exploiting the tools that they have now versus back then. Because I did a deep dive going down like a century worth of history to figure out like where even did where did the coding system come from? Because I knew that was what was being exploited to hide all the genocide. And I somehow figured out this is how they measure everything. So I went back and found there's a guy who is like the father of epidemiology, William Farr. He's the guy who came up with the 2 weeks to flatten the curve. He's very much into germ theory. And he was a eugenicist. And he was so nefarious in what he did. He was in the census office. He was collecting all this information. And he said, we need multiple databases so we can cross-reference all this information. He wanted everything on everybody centralized in one location. That's what they have been trying to do for over a century. And now they finally have the tools to do it. So now they've got Palantir that has all our electronic health information, if we're vaccinated or not. They've got programs built into there to use that information that can assign us risk scores and predict behavior and then execute the target. Right. I mean, they have another program called Gotham that basically is a military program to exit. I mean, it is so nefarious. And the whole point is to get multiple databases. So not just the gene banks, but also to get your health information, your social media information, your bank information, everything about you, so that they can then predict behavior. And we're absolutely moving into this pre-crime territory where they're using that information to basically exterminate us, or, you know, choose who's going to be who's going to be the positive eugenics group that gets promoted, and who's going to be the negative eugenics group that gets exterminated. Yeah. William Farr would be proud with how far we've come with things like Palantir and gene banks and all of that. If they had those tools back then, I don't know if we'd be having this conversation today.
Yeah. Brzezinski talked about that too, that they were only limited by the technology. Otherwise they'd kill a million people instantly if they could. This is a really dangerous network of people. I get nervous about, of course, the future of this. Unfortunately, my mind goes to like these really bad places. I start thinking about like what these lunatics are up to with organ harvesting and medical research and cadaver research and all the stuff that we hear a little bit about. On surface level of the medical industry, we hear about organ harvest, the above board organ donation services. And people are like, oh, you know, this is if you, you know, you die in some unfortunate circumstance or you're near death and, you know, you can give your lungs to some other guy who needs it. Like, you know, all sold as a benefit, nice of you to do, of you to do, get your organ donor designation status on your license, you know, all that stuff, so that we know when we're pulling the wallet out of your half-dead body whether or not we should finish you off or, you know, try to bring you back. What is really going on when you scratch below the surface of that? Because, look, these are the same people that are trying to kill you. I don't want them in charge of organ harvesting, you know, for good or evil. But I get the feeling that there's way more to this story. What did you find?
Oh God, yes. So even before I started waking up to any of the COVID stuff or vaccine stuff, I would tell everybody I know, just from my experience in healthcare, do not put yourself down as an organ donor. Never allow anyone to give you an organ, and don't give your organs, which sounds horrible to people who are like, oh, but you know, you want to, you know, preserve people we love or whatever. The part that I knew at that time that most people don't know is organs, transplanted organs, will only last about 10 years. So if you are 40, you have a kidney transplant, that'll probably last till you're about 50. Then you need another one. Then you have to go through the procedure again, might get another kidney, you might live another 10 years. And once you're on one of these organ transplants, any kind of organ transplant, even if it's a stem cell, which is basically just a transfusion, sometimes they take out your own stem cells and then they'll hold it like in a fridge or whatever. And it's called autologous, and they'll transfuse that back in. And I know a family member who had that done. And guess what they do after that? They make you get all your vaccines again throughout your entire life, because now you're no longer immune, which is just diabolical in and of itself. But then they put you on these organ anti-rejection drugs, which are horrible. They're just basically pure toxins, and they shut down your immune system. So it's really, really hard on your body to even, you know, be an organ acceptor, a transplant recipient is the name. What I did not know, and what I've been finding out a lot about since, is that people are alive when the organs are harvested, and they have to be alive when the organs are harvested. And nobody really involved in the whole organ thing, except for maybe the surgeons, are aware that the patient is alive when this happens. Because me as a coder, it was actually my job. I worked at a hospital, multiple hospitals, that did organ transplants. And to get your certification to be a coder, you have to take a test. And one of the things is, how do you code an organ transplant? So we're all familiar with how you read the operative report and which organ you're taking, which patient's going into, and how to assign the proper codes for the procedure. So we all know what happens, and we know how to assign the codes. But it never actually gets to a point in reality where you get to see the entire chart. What happens is, patient is declared brain dead, and they have a consultant come in and two different doctors certify patient's brain dead. And then they basically decease the patient. So like, your coding job is done at that point. And you can tell from the record that people are walking in at that point to prep the patient for the transplant. But what happens then is, a manager takes that chart away. You never see it again. They change the name of the patient to transplant, blah, blah, and it's under a new account number. So it would never be connected with the original chart. And it's somebody else who touches it, which is why I say everything is so siloed, to where you would never actually know everything that's going on in healthcare. You have to actually like be in different departments to actually even get any sort of an idea what's going on. So when I started to put this together, I realized how nefarious the whole organ transplant thing was. But then another layer is, I was doing research for my book. And one of the things that has been brought up is the whole lipid nanoparticle thing and graphene, and how graphene is in the lipid nanoparticle. And some people debate that, but I think it's pretty true, pretty well proven. And that there's connective properties between 5G or Wi-Fi or whatever and graphene. But the other thing they're using graphene for is organ transplants, like to create tissues that they could implant. So they're trying to use graphene to implant all these different, and make it so we can actually grow and engineer an organ partially out of graphene and transplant that, so we don't actually need a live human. So I really think it's going towards this transhumanist direction, just based on the research that the peer-reviewed research that I'm seeing coming out in the journals on that. They're literally trying to get to a point where it's not really even a human that's going to be donating the organs. It's going to be stuff that's grown in a lab. I think that's ultimately where they're trying to end up with the whole organ transplant.
Is that why Dick Cheney's had so many heart transplants? Because they just don't last too long?
Maybe they're all running screaming because they don't want to be there. Like the Aliens movie. Like,
you know. Good. I have great news for you, ma'am. Your husband's heart is going to found a new home. And I have also bad news. It's Dick Cheney. It's Dick Cheney's chest is where it's going. So, you know, I'm sorry about that. But this is, I mean, again, that's one of these areas, organ transplants or organ donors, that it's like, it's shielded with this good guy persona where like, you can't challenge that? What are you, a monster? You're going to prevent some guy who, you know, like as an example, like, as I said, they murdered my friend, Kev Baker. Kev Baker had a great show, the Kev Baker Show in Scotland. I was on there every month for 4 years. He was one of my favorite people. He had COPD and he's on the government healthcare system there, which required him to get vaccinated. He did not want to do it. It was against his will during the COVID. But the reason why he had to do it, he told me, they're going to throw me off the lung transplant list. He needed a lung transplant for COPD. He's like, they're going to throw me off the list if I don't take the vaccines. If they throw me off the list, I won't get a lung. I'm going to die. If I do take the vaccines, I may get a lung and I may die from that. He was in a no-win situation. Then they compounded that when he came in the hospital. They put him on a ventilator and that was the end. So I have a level of hatred in my heart for these people that is probably unhealthy for me, but I've got it anyway. And it's not for nothing. It's because they killed people close to me. A lot of people.
I do too. My dad had COPD and he died about a year ago. He had 3 shots and he got a blood disorder. And I do believe that the blood disorder helped lead to his death because it has to do with oxygen carrying capacity. When you have COPD and you're not able to get oxygen in, the amount of oxygen your blood can carry to your organs is critical. So I do believe that even though I don't think it was like a direct cause, because it was the COPD that progressed that led to the end, but at least I was able to keep him at home and off a ventilator, because I told him all the horror stories of what happened to the people in the hospital and he didn't want to go. So at least I was able to keep him at home. I don't think they would have let him be on an organ transplant list. And thank God I didn't have to go through that, because that would have been, I would have been so torn about what do I even do? Do I let my dad go through it? Or, you know, I guess it comes down to, you know, the person's individual choice. But everybody has a story of how the medical industry is trying or tried to kill us or someone we know. And like right there at the end, my dad, he just needed like some refills on medications. And his doctor had like you can go to like, I don't know, health grades or something like that. And she got special gold stars for vaccinating her patients. And she literally kicked him out of her practice because he wouldn't get a 4th booster because he was already injured. And she knew that. And she had the documentation. That's how diabolical these people are. They won't look at the evidence right in front of them. And it's why I call it a cult. Because logically, if you're trying to do the best thing for your patient, you're trying to do no harm, you're trying to respect their decision for their body, you wouldn't treat patients like that.
Right. You're in an industry, or at least you were in an industry, that measures and quantifies everything that you can get you. It's literally your job is to find the stats. But how much was unquantifiable during the COVID era? You know, the people who hugged their loved ones goodbye through plastic sheets or put their palms up against the window. The grandparents who were scared and alone and old and dying in a hospital, separated from their spouse of 50 years, you know, with no ability. I'll never forgive these people for what they did. It is easy, you know, we put a couple years distance between us and the events, and it seems like it's in the past, but I refuse to let some of this stuff go, man, until there's accountability for it. Nobody's going to prison for this. Nobody's going to jail for murder. Andrew Cuomo's running for mayor of New York City again. He should be in handcuffs. They should be debating whether or not what his last meal is going to be, not whether or not he should be the mayor of New York City. He should be thrown off the Empire State Building.
Yeah, or does he get the electric chair or lethal injection?
Those are the only choices that should be made with that guy. So, but again, you saw this. We all saw it from a different angle, right? But you know, you can't measure the pain. You can't put that on a spreadsheet somewhere. You can't get compensated from Big Pharma for that. You know, for the untold horrors that we experienced because somebody decided to reimagine society over a virus that didn't even exist.
Yeah. I actually just connected with someone in the UK who actually worked at NHS in the UK for a little while. And he's starting something called the Post-COVID Trauma Institute. Okay. And he believes that probably every one of my subscribers, maybe a lot of your audience too, has what he is calling post-COVID trauma syndrome, which is like a PTSD related to COVID. Oh, and it's not just people who experience like a direct death or, you know, even knew what was going on. It's the change in society, the loss that we felt with whatever happened to your job, or there's just so many different layers of it. And he says that you know, we've all really lived through a genocide. It's still happening, and we're still surviving a genocide. And there is a kind of trauma that goes with that. And I think what you're talking about quantifying, that's what like the statistical system to measure eugenics that I call ICD-10 can't measure. It wasn't designed to measure that. It wasn't designed to measure human pain and suffering. To me, like the worst part was when they separate, when they turned hospitals into nobody can go unless you're a patient, you can't see visitors anymore. And they put security at the doors, because I was reading records of, and of course these patients were dead already, so there was nothing I could do. But I was reading records every single day of family members trying to go into the hospital to break their family members and their friends out. And police and security would be called to throw the family members out while the medical care team was in there killing their family member. And to me, like the amount of trauma that people, like the most, one of the most sacred and precious things in life is a birth and a death. Because at a death, and I can say that now, at least you are there for the person, you get closure. And it's really more about the people that the deceased person has left behind. To get that moment with your parent or with your loved one or whatever, and be able to say whatever it is, or just spend some time with them and let them know, like, hey, I'm here for you, I care. That is so human. And they can't measure that. And they can't measure what it costs when you take that away from people. But so many people are suffering with not being able to say goodbye to their loved ones because of that, on top of, you know, losing people suddenly to vaccines or turbo cancer or whatever, maybe losing their job and their house and their livelihood in some cases, like me. There's so many different layers. And you can quantify maybe some of it. Like if you lost a job, you can say, well, there's this much money I would have made. But there's no system that can measure, like for the parents that didn't get to say, because they wouldn't allow fathers to be in the delivery room when moms were delivering babies. I'm not a parent, but I couldn't imagine being a father and being denied that most precious opportunity.
I was in
life.
There. I was a sobbing mess. They should have thrown me out. But that's one of those things I'll never forget, right? It's one of the, and to steal a memory like that from somebody. I'm glad that they're doing that in the UK. I'm glad that they're trying to draw some attention to this. It's hard for someone in my position to complain about. I mean, I'm frustrated and I make myself known that I am. But so many other people had it 100 times worse than I did, right? And I'm angry from just my almost like observer standpoint in it. You know, I wasn't locked down. I worked from home. I went wherever I wanted anyway. So I didn't experience a lot of this, and I was still frustrated. And so I recognize that these people who had to say goodbye to family members because of that. I did this last year with my mom. I was there at the end for her death. I managed that entire process. If somebody had told me, I don't know, in the last hours that I wasn't allowed to go in there, I would have murdered them with my own hands. And then I would have been there for my mom. And then when that was over, I would walk out and with my arms up and say, you can put the cuffs on me, but I will smother you to get to my mother in there who's dying. And then we can sort this out with the repercussions of that later. I can't imagine people being put in that situation and then having to make that calculation, trying to break their family members out of the hospital so that the hospital won't murder them and being turned away by armed guards. People ask why I hate the police so much. That's why I hate the police so much. It's things like that.
Absolutely.
Where is your humanity? Yeah. Where is your soul? Like, we don't have a problem with people breaking the rules in this country, although you'd like to think we have a problem with compliance. We have a problem with too many people doing exactly what they're told to do and not thinking about it and challenging it. Man, that happened during COVID, and that was an epidemic.
I was just following orders. Yep, exactly. I have the exact same complaint and problem and totally agree with you that we are at a place now where no one has been held accountable. The PREP Act is preventing anyone from being held accountable. And this could happen again at any point in time.
Yeah.
Because the people who are there have proven they are order followers. As an example, at one time, I think it was 2021, in Arizona, I was visiting Arizona for a little while, and they just changed the law to where the state couldn't shut anything down. They couldn't mandate masking or distancing or anything. It was the business owner's decision if they wanted to do anything like that. I think it was the only state to have that rule for a while until everything went away. And so I decided on this entire trip, I'm not going to mask. I'm not going to distance. I'm going to challenge every single place, no matter what, and see how far I get. And I walked in, most of the places in Arizona were fine, but I walked in one place and they had an armed security guard, and I didn't get my pinky toe in there. Everyone in there was in a line, all distance, military style with their masks on. And I go to walk in, I don't have my mask or anything. I didn't get my pinky toe in the door before the guy, and he's like foot taller than me, is standing in my face, towering over me, yelling at me, telling me I need to wear a mask and I need to comply. And at that point, I didn't really care about shopping at the store. I just wanted to make a point that this guy is following orders and he needs to decide which side he wants to be on. So I started asking him questions about, do you think masking works now after a year? Do you think increasing masking compliance is going to change anything? Because literally the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. It's been a year. So what do you think? And the way I phrased the questions, he couldn't answer any of them. So he just kept saying, oh, well, I'm just following orders. And I went, you know what? That's what the Nazis said during the Nuremberg trials. And I mean, side note, we can dissect what the Nuremberg trials really were. But the point of the story is not to be an order follower. And that's why I use that as an example. And he goes, ha, 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 well, I'm part German, so I just thought it would be funny to say that. So, like, they literally just laugh it off, like they have no conscience or soul at all. And at that point, I just stared at him and I went, you know what? I'm part German, too, but I'm not a Nazi. And I walked off.
It's frustrating. It's tough to, you know, there's a lot of people whose jobs depended on not understanding what was going on or, you know, saying I'm just following orders. I have no respect for that. I have it's a pretty sad way to live. This is a, you know, these are really heavy topics. I've found that, you know, in writing about this, these sorts of things, it really takes a toll on me. How have you been holding up? We've been talking about kind of a new version of PTSD. How have you been holding up in this aftermath of it? Because it feels like some people, COVID broke them, and some people came out of it steel-plated, you know, like ready to handle anything and on a mission and really motivated. In the aftermath, looking back on all of this now, you know, 5 years from when it started, 4 years from when the vaccines rolled out, how do you view the future moving forward? Or clearly it didn't break you. How you feeling?
No, they tried. I feel like I was forged in fire at this point, and nothing can stop me and nothing can take me down. I know that might sound like a little full of myself, but it's only after being up against so much and then overcoming each and every challenge that has been handed to me. I mean, I rebuilt my website 6 different times in 1 year, and I'm still going. I've had multiple payment processors shut me down and try and debank me, and I'm still going. I've been shadow banned. I've been homeless. I mean, literally everything that you could possibly think of. I've had family members die. I got divorced. I lost everything. Literally, my life will never be the same again. But I found a strength like I never knew that I had out of the whole thing. And I don't know, it's given me, because of that inner strength, that's why I keep going on, despite everything, despite the continued intense attacks that continue to never stop. I mean, I'm to the point where even the people that have been helping me are telling me, take a step back, you should walk away. And I'm like, no, this is when you double down. This is when you lean in. And for the future, I have hope that we're going to get out of this, but I think it will get worse before it gets better, unfortunately. In 2020 and 2021, I started to hear a lot of people say, oh, I think it's going to have to get worse before it gets better. And I even read a whole bunch of letters from my grandpa from World War II throughout the whole process of World War II. And just like reading and analyzing, because he was actually in the war. And these were like when he was in the military. And so he couldn't really say what was going on because everything was like his job at one point was even to censor all the letters that were going right. home. So, I mean, they still did that back then. But I got the sense that it had to get worse before it got better. And unfortunately, I think we're still in the process of getting worse. I don't want it to be true, but I think not enough people have had enough pressure put on them to really get to that point to decide, well, okay, do I want to give up my livelihood? Do I really want to give up access to the bank in order to hold to my morals and my ethics? And I think more and more people are going to have to come to that point. And then very, very quickly, it'll be like a ball rolling down the hill. Like, I think it'll move really fast. Because when you look at things like what happened in America, 1776, when we formed the Constitution and everything, there was about a 10-year process where everything had to get exponentially worse until enough pressure was applied that everyone went, okay, we're done. And then they started taking things into their own hands. And I am seeing a lot of people taking things into their own hands. And the more I see that, the more hope I get. But I think this digital ID thing is going to put the pressure on, and people are going to be tested at least one more time. I'm seeing a lot of propaganda about another measles outbreak, right. And different countries are starting to mask up again and lock down again. So, like, that's definitely still brewing. They might still try and work some kind of pandemic scenario again. The immigration situation is obviously going to boil over, I think, here pretty soon. So I don't think we're done yet. I don't think they're done with us yet. But I do think that we'll come out ahead. I'm not sure how that's going to happen. I know people like you and like me are out there, like, at least trying to help guide people toward a better future. And that gives me a lot of hope, because I'm starting to see more and more people just like go out on their own and do things for themselves. Like, more people are involved in homesteading and finding community now than ever before. And that's a really great thing to see.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be funny if COVID woke up a large segment of the population to the bullshit and they just opted out and they just decided they don't want to participate in this, whether it's big pharma, you know, maybe it's big pharma that starts them down this path of not wanting to play ball with all these people. And maybe it's banking after that. And maybe they just say, screw it. I don't even want to live around people like that. I want to go live in some intentional community someplace with a bunch of like-minded people and not be worried that the welfare queens of the state are all going to rise up and freak out because EBT got turned off or whatever. You know, that I want to be around sane people. It'd be hilarious if COVID backfired and wound up waking up the world to what they were
well
doing.
You know what's kind of ironic along those lines is that, and I think this trend is continuing to this day, that in America, everyone was told our government's great. Mexico's the one that's corrupted. Right. They've got all these drug cartels and their government is paid off by the drug cartels. So Mexico's totally corrupt. That's why Mexicans are coming up to America. And I mean, I grew up in, you know, in a farming community, and there's a lot of Mexicans that have moved up from Mexico. So like Spanish is almost a second language here, even though it's nowhere near Mexico. And so there was this whole American mentality of, oh, well, keep them in Mexico. They're taking our jobs. And now it's gone totally backwards. And now Americans are moving to Mexico for more freedom.
Yeah.
And the ironic thing is they're doing it because they know our government is corrupt. And at least in Mexico, they know that.
Yeah.
Like, that's a part of the culture. Yeah. Unlike America.
That's so funny. Yeah. The irony is that the Mexicans in Mexico are getting mad because all the gringos are coming down there and screwing it up. It's like, oh, hey, listen, I grew up in Southern California. You might want to sit this one out in terms of who's coming where from where, you know? I mean, geez. But
oh my God. Yeah, you did a episode on Welcome to California.
Yeah.
And that has been my experience in Oregon because the Californians all come up here.
Yeah.
And we even have a bumper sticker now that says, don't California my Oregon, because it's been happening so much.
Yeah, well, it's what a trip to go through all of this. Well, where's the best place for people to find you if they want to buy your books or, you know, get their website rebuilt by you?
Yeah, it's something I can do now, unfortunately. So I did rebuild my website. It is now working private, secure server. So you go to thrillkillmedicalcult.com. And I just turned on payments today. I've been working on that for like 4 straight weeks. So I finally got that going again. So you can actually purchase books through the website now as of today. So, and that is the only place to get the book. I've had to pull them off of Amazon and Lulu Press and Draft to Digital because they wouldn't pay me. I fought Draft to Digital for a year to pay me. Lulu Press was playing games with taking my book out of global distribution and just like different stuff. So I decided, you know what? I don't want to fight you to get paid. I'm just going to take, I make the most when people buy direct from me anyway. So let's cut out the middleman. Don't give Jeff Bezos anything. Buy on Amazon. Buy from me.
There you go.
Eventually, I will get it back out, but that's when I do an updated version. So for now, it's just eBay for international and thrillkillmedicalcult.com. Also, I'm doing a release on Substack. So I'm on Substack at zoe.substack.com, zoe.substack.com. And for paid subscribers only, I had been doing a one chapter per month, but I'm going to up that to probably like one chapter per week or every 2 weeks, something like that. And I'll be running the older chapters too, so you can get everything. But I'm never going to have the whole book on Substack at once is the thing, because people just take the book and get it for free off there. So $5 a month and you get access to the book, and it has audiobook, which I just released, and you can buy it now today. Ebook, and it's kind of like a mixed media between all of them, the print copy, the ebook, and the audio on Substack. So it's kind of a cool medium to check
it out. I hope people will go over there and support your work. When Berwick and I put out The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, we put it out on the Friday before the election in 2020. On Saturday, literally the next day, there was another book called A Summary of the Controlled Demolition of the American Empire that was available literally 24 hours later. That was the same. It was our book, like summarized, or I don't know. I never bought it, but I saw it and I messaged Jeff and I said, hey, he goes, this isn't you, is it? I said, no, it's not me. I didn't even know this was here. And he said, I said, what do you want to do about it? He goes, I don't give a shit. Just leave him up there. But I did have to message Amazon one time, and when it came time to do audiobooks, and I was like, there's somebody squatting on my audiobook. You're going to need to throw them out of there. So there was an audiobook of my book before there was an actual one. So I don't know how it all works, but I know that there's some fuckery afoot on Amazon. So if people are interested in getting your book, just go directly to thrillkillmedicalcult.com. That's Zoe Smith. Everybody go out there and support her work. Follow her on Substack and on social media if you can find it out there. She's the most banned person
around must be something good in that book. You might want to go out there and check it out for yourself. And if you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the website. Best place to do that. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you again later.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.